Today on The Grave Talks, a blue-collar approach to the paranormal. 20 years ago, Marshall Wallace and his wife had just bought their first house and brought their new baby home. About a week after bringing their daughter home, he saw a terrifying apparition of a woman in the doorway. That apparition changed his life forever. He began searching for answers, and 20 years later, he is still fascinated by the paranormal, and his search for answers continues. He and his wife began their own paranormal investigation team, Blue Collar Paranormal. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, we'll talk about their approach to investigations, as well as some locations they frequent. Today, a conversation with Marshall Wallace of Blue Collar Paranormal. Well, Marshall, thank you so much for being on The Grave Talks today. How did you get started in paranormal investigations?
Well, I'd say it was about 20 years ago. Me and my wife had bought our first home, and it was a transition, you know, but I always had that kind of like that tingle on the back of my neck. And when my daughter was born, her and her mother were there in the bed, and just as vivid as I'm sitting here right now speaking to you, I was sitting straight up in the bed, and my wife said that I was screaming a horror scream, and she could see the blood pounding in my veins and my neck, but I wasn't making a sound. And I seen a woman standing in my doorway of that house. And I guess the sheer terror of it, and you know, it grabbed a hold of me, and I needed to figure out what was that. So, I mean, it's been, you know, a 20-year investigation and a 20-year trip that, you know, I don't want to end because I still want to figure it out.
So your daughter had just been born, and then you saw that?
She hadn't been home about maybe a week and a half, and she didn't sleep in her bedroom because that was the bedroom where the lady had passed away. We'd got the house because the woman had passed away. And every time my daughter went in there to go to sleep, you know, she would just throw the god-awfulest fits in there, would not sleep, restless. So finally, I just made a decision that, you know, my little girl wasn't going to sleep in there. She's going to sleep in there with, you know, us. And that night, you know, I can remember going in there and her just going right to sleep with no issues. And, you know, I just felt a little uneasy, but I didn't pay no attention to it. And when I woke up, and I mean, it changed my life forever, what I saw.
Do you think what you saw was the woman who had died in the house?
I believe so, because, you know, after finding out, you know, she was bed bound, wheelchair bound, and, you know, her kids had not come to see her in many, many, many years. And I don't really know how to say it. It was a residual, but it had a little bit of maliciousness to it in my eyes.
Oh, I was thinking maybe she was excited. There was a baby in the house. She was feeling maternal and all that, but you felt something darker. Well,
yeah, I felt that, you know, if she would have been inviting and, you know, welcoming towards the baby, you know, and I'd have felt that energy, because that's my gift. I can feel energies, you know. I'm not psychic by no means, but, you know, I can tell good people from bad people. And this one, it kept me in almost a fight or flight mode. That's how I felt whenever the energy started moving in the house and everything. And that night previous to me waking up, it was on high alert. You know, I knew something, like I could feel my heart rate going up and everything. So I knew something was wrong.
Had you had those feelings before in your life, but after that night, you really figured out what it was and how to kind of read your own feelings?
Well, I think before that too, my my oldest brother had passed away at a young age. I was a young, I was the baby of the brothers. And my oldest brother passed away. For months, I would see him in a crowd, or I would hear his voice. So I think through, dealing with that tragedy and starting to understand, there's more out there that I need to understand and just open myself up to.
So did you start investigating first and then you put your own team together? Or did you just kind of get interested, maybe like joined a few investigations other people were hosting and then started your own?
No, we had went to a location up in Gettysburg, and me, my wife, and my daughter. That was the start of it. And we went on like an extreme hunt, I believe it was. And we were hooked, and we bought just a little bitty starter kit ghost hunting thing. You could put in a knapsack. Went every place we could. We met a whole lot of good people that, showed us different things. And I told my wife one night sitting on the couch, I said, you know what? I said, I want to start my own crew, because, we enjoy it for the camaraderie and, just the thrill of the investigation. And I said, and I'm an average guy. And I said, let's call it Blue Collar Paranormal, because, we all got a little bit of blue collar. Uh-huh. So
you put together the investigation team. Did your daughter, because you said your daughter went with you to Gettysburg. Did she join the team too? Is that something she's interested in now?
Oh, she's been doing it since she was like 10 or 11 years old.
Really?
Because we do it family oriented. We do not deal with any kind of provocation, I think they call it. Any kind of mysticism as far as boards or stuff like that. We do it for a family atmosphere because we enjoy doing it, and we want our friends and our families to be able to come out and enjoy the paranormal world and not worry about things that they have seen.
Yeah.
They want them to experience the good part of it.
Because there are some really dark things that can come with it. And so I was kind of curious, has there ever been a place that you investigated that you really wanted to leave? Or maybe you were like, let's get out of here. This is too much for us.
I tell you what, Mansfield Reformatory. Reformatory. Me and my wife went to a great big event up there. And like I said, we had just started, we had just a little backpack of equipment. We had went down into the sub-basement of the Mansfield Reformatory. And, we'd set up equipment and everything. And, I asked, and this goes back to what you said about the darker things. In the basement, we asked the question, can you make a noise for us? And all of a sudden, a pipe flew from the wall right into the middle of the crowd. And that was one time I told my wife, I said, I need to go outside and get some air because I cannot understand or explain that. It scared me. It was terrifying.
And no explanation for that.
No, there was no reason. The steam had been cut out of them lines years ago. There was nothing against them. It just come flying. I mean, it was somersault. It was so violent, and when it hit the floor.
But it didn't hit anybody.
No, ma'am.
Thank goodness. It's almost when something like that happens, when it doesn't hit anybody, because it seems like it could. It's more, I would perceive that more as a threat, like you leave now or I can really mess with you.
Yeah, I believe that, if you go into a situation, they'll let you know. And then whenever they've had enough, I believe that it with the right amount of energy that they could do physical harm.
Because if you're throwing a pipe, it could have easily hit somebody. But it almost seems like it wasn't meant to hit anybody. It was more meant like a threat.
Yeah, kind of like to spook them.
Right.
Get out.
Yeah.
I'm warning you right now.
Uh-huh.
Leave me alone.
Because it seems like something's powerful enough to have done that. It could have landed wherever it wanted it to land.
That's the way I look at it is, you know, they're not in our world, but they're in our world.
Mm-hmm.
And they have enough energy to pick up something solid and throw it. That's a lot of energy right there. If they can direct that energy in a certain way to either warn you to get out or just flat out, I'm done with you. But yeah, it's very, the darker part of it is very, very definitely real. I'm a stern believer in the point that the reason I don't do things like the provocation or the boards is because I don't know enough to keep myself out of trouble. So I'm just not going to do it.
Yep. I think that's a really good idea.
You see a lot of people nowadays, they want to go in and they want to, you know, be mean and, you know, push and poke at them. The energy you put out is the energy you'll receive, in my eyes.
Do you think some of that is caused by television shows where people think they can just walk in, turn some equipment on, they're getting stuff right away? You know, maybe people don't realize what's behind it and how to respect the location and what they might encounter there.
Well, I think a lot of the harder running paranormal teams, I don't know how to say it, but they do go in on TV and they're pressing so hard. And I think that's not the image that we need to be given as a paranormal community. You know, it's not all like that.
Does your team do private investigations if someone was to have a location they're wanting some answers to, or they're needing someone to come in and see what they're dealing with? Do you do any of that?
Yes, ma'am, we do. We've had quite a few home investigations that we've been contacted, and we leave it all totally confidential unless they want to, you know, bring it forth. But yes, we go in and we set up for them. But I let them know right before I go in, I am no exorcist. I am simply an investigator. I can tell you the evidence that I find. And, you know, I will be truthful with you. If I think that there's something in your home or there's something not in your home, I will tell you.
Keeping it completely confidential, have you gone into a home where you were really surprised by the activity in it?
Yes, ma'am.
When that happens, you know, there are people who are living there. How do they take that information? I mean, I guess it would be confirmation in a way, right?
I believe it's more on the confirmation side, because when we deliver the evidence to people and we show them the recordings, we're able to solidify what they've been saying. You know, speaking of one, you know, a young lady and her child had been, you know, just tormented by something. And we were allowed to go in and, you know, investigate, and just the amount of activity in the short period of time that we were in there was staggering. It made that woman feel better, because I know there's been situations where people just feel like I'm going crazy,
mm-hmm.
but not whenever you can be told by scientific evidence or video, audio proof, you know, you're not, and you're telling the truth and you're seeing what you're seeing.
And at that point, with that kind of evidence, someone could reach out to someone, maybe come in to bless their home. Maybe, you know, there might be some things they can do to get rid of whatever's there. Because it's just hard. You don't know exactly what you're dealing with.
Oh, yeah. I always let everybody know, be mindful of your moods whenever I go into a home investigation. When I converse with the homeowners, you know, the ones that are troubled, I always let them know, be mindful of your moods. Be mindful that if you're feeling extra sad because that entity or something other may be just drawing energy off of you. Make sure you keep your core strong. Make sure you keep yourself grounded and have your belief, that one thing that nothing can penetrate, that keeps you solid. That's what holds me together.
I think that's really good advice.
We're dealing with things that, you know, we don't know about. And when we go into this, we all want to be warriors in this. But right now, we're just in the beginning stages of understanding this stuff. You know, the equipment and everything that's being built right now is helping us out a whole lot. So kudos to our equipment builders.
Speaking of equipment, what are some of your pieces of equipment that you really rely on the most? Or do you kind of use a lot of different things?
When we do like a location, an event, like when we went to Trans-Allegheny, we will just take we'll take our motion detecting music boxes, our trip wires, our clean sweep boxes. So we'll take some cat balls, grid pins. You know, we don't bring out all of our equipment because it would just take, you know, you're talking 7 or 8 cases of equipment. So you got to pack lightly.
Well, and you mentioned cat balls, and it's C-A-T, cat balls. And yes, ma'am. I saw in some video of you using them, and I think my cats actually would love them, but they're just little balls that light up.
Yeah, they're vibration sensitive.
Okay.
So if something gets next to that, there is no reason. That's why they're I think they're one of the most valuable tools that we have right now, because that vibration, you know, if that thing's sitting there and it's not lit up and all of a sudden you're getting contact and it lights up, something had to touch that thing. Something had to move it for it to light up. So, you know, I really enjoy them. And whenever we have our, you know, junior league investigators come in, you know, the kids love them.
And you did mention the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. And we did an episode with them probably a couple months ago. It sounded fascinating and it sounded terrifying to me at the same time. Were you kind of somewhere in between fascinated and terrorized, or how did you feel there?
Okay. I was absolutely blown away by the architecture. This place is massive.
It's massive.
It's deceptively big. As far as terror, as far as the heebie-jeebies, that thing it deserves its moniker as one of the most haunted places in America. It scared me.
Just like looking at it, I could see. It scares me to look at the building because you just imagine what's behind the walls. And then when you think of the history.
Oh, yeah. The amount of history that's in that place. I mean, it was halted being built while the Civil War was going on. They stopped building it during the Civil War. I mean, that's an old building that's seen, you know, tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And it's all stored up there in that rock. It's just a big, massive, whirling conundrum in my eyes, because it's scary. It's a scary place.
With your group, you have some locations that you go to frequently, correct? And people can join you on investigations in these locations?
Oh, yeah.
Are those, because you've got 3 locations you take groups to, correct?
Yes, ma'am. We do guided tours, and we, you know, we book out reservations for people to come do their own private hunts.
The one that led me to you was I saw it on Facebook, the Haunted Murray Station Homestead. Now, the building that's standing there now probably is not the original building on the property, because they built a cabin there in the 1700s.
Yeah, and they added the front on, and I think my wife was telling me in the 1800s, 1850s, somewhere around there. This place had seen Indian raids, slavery. And, it was It was at the crossroads of the markers there in Bracken County, Kentucky. Up on the hill from the Murray Station Homestead, you can actually see the giant markers, man-made markers, where that route was run through, because Murray Station was, let me say, like a hub, a trading hub.
Okay. Is any of the original building still there?
Yes, ma'am. The cabin is still there.
It's still there.
Yes, ma'am.
Just by looking at it, you know, it's one of those buildings. In fact, all three of these that you go to frequently, and we'll talk about all three, two of them looked really haunted. The school looks like a school. So I'm very interested in talking about that. But this seems like someplace that would be haunted. Do you live nearby and you'd heard about it for years and you went in and did an investigation?
No, ma'am. Actually, back last September, like I was telling you, where me and my wife decided just one day we said, let's take Blue Collar Paranormal to a festival. We set up a little booth and we had such a wonderful couple, Becky and Brian. They're the owners of Murray Station. They came by and they was like, do you investigate? And can you come out to my house? I said, I would love to. And me and my daughter went out there, and Becky and Brian were giving us a tour up to the children's room, to the right-handed closet. And with my own eyes and my daughter sitting right there, we seen Becky's arm when she opened the door of the closet. She's pulling it to her. It slammed back closed so hard it almost dislocated her shoulder. And that was the first time I'd ever walked into Murray Station. And it come to find out that Becky, I had known her family for many, many years. So, I mean, it was fate to meet these people and to be at Murray Station, because this place is an absolute treasure of history.
Yes, it has so much history. And when you think about it, too, there's a lot of dark things that's happened on that land.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would imagine, you know, a door slamming violently wouldn't be surprising. There would be some kind of dark energy there, I would think.
Yeah.
And not necessarily all of them, of course.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to take the good from the bad and learn to discern from what you're dealing with in these situations in the paranormal. Because you'll have instances when one entity will try to act like something else and it'll try to fool you. So you always have to keep your mind open and put your guard on. And like I said, stay rooted to make it through the investigation.
Now, are there some spirits that come through frequently? You know, I've talked to some people who say the more they're in one location, they kind of become known to them, they become known to you. Have you experienced that there?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. We frequently get speak to by Ian and John Murray and Lily. And they know our names, too. They've said them on the clean sweep boxes that we have. How they would say my name, it just amazes me, because I don't let everybody know my real name, my middle name. And if it can tell me my middle name, yeah, it's communicating directly with us.
What are some of the interesting things that have happened to you at that location? Or another question too, and you can answer both of these, is sometimes, you know, you do an investigation, somebody else does, and then you find out later that it matches up with each other.
Oh, there's nothing more exciting than, you know, when evidence from two separate groups, two separate, you know, teams, states apart, half a country apart, their evidence is matching up word for word, T for T. You know, that's exciting for me, because it validates me and gives me that little bit of pride to say, you know, I knew it. I knew I was right. There is something here. A couple of the things there at Murray Station that has just has put it really near to my heart is that was the first time I'd ever been touched I mean, actual physical contact. And that meant a lot to me. I didn't feel anything bad when I was touched. It felt like a young child's hand. That means a whole lot to me. We've had the doorknob turn and open the front door of the house. That was another one that kind of shook me to the core because of the amount of energy.
I was having a conversation with my sister recently about being touched by a ghost. And she said, you know, would you feel ice cold? And I said, I just think it would be depending on what's touching you. If it's a child, you might, or if it's a caring, loving spirit, I don't think it would make you feel icy cold. I think you would maybe feel a warmth or kind of a hug about that experience. And you have a very positive experience.
Yes, ma'am. I can remember when my baby girl was a little girl, and I can remember walking up and putting her little hand on me. And, you know, I knew that was her. I felt that connection. I felt that love between me and her. And when that little hand had touched me, I guess I almost felt that same charge, because I wasn't alarmed. I was spooked. Now, don't get me wrong, but I wasn't, you know, alarmed. That meant a lot to me. Now, I tell you, I have been, when we were in Fairfield County Infirmary, that was another one that was really, you know, I got touched up there, and that did scare me.
My guess is that it's two different energies, two different ghosts. Like, it could have been a child, or it could be something evil. I guess it could be an evil child. I don't like to think of that.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't like that idea.
A lot of scary things in the paranormal world, but an evil little kid in the dark room? No.
I would not like that. I would like an evil kid in real life. So you've been to the Murray Station Homestead quite a few times. Now, does the family live there, or is it more of a museum these days?
Brian and Becky, they live on site.
Okay.
They live next to the house. And Brian, you know, he had seen the home, and he said that's just a beautiful place, and said that he was drawn to it. And, you know, we go in, the team goes in, and we'll do cleanup days. We'll go in and, you know, help the owners with things, because if you're going to investigate in a property and be a home team supervisor, you know, you need to help take care of the property. So, I mean, that's what we do.
Which is a huge help to them, because a property that old would need a lot. Because it'd be kind of constant, really. Get something fixed, something else breaks down.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
The people who live there, since they approached you, my guess is they've had experiences there themselves, right?
Yes, ma'am. Actually, they investigate with us. They investigate all the time with us.
So they don't find this, I don't know, maybe my own experience of living in a haunted house wasn't a very positive one for me, but I couldn't imagine living like that and then investigating it at the same time. So maybe there's something there that he is drawn to the place.
I truly believe that. I really do. Because, I mean, this is the kind of fella that if he told me right now it was sunshine, and I would put on sunglasses. He's that trustworthy. And he said he just feels like an emotional connection to the land and the home. He's very adamant about it, too.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Marshall Wallace of Blue Collar Paranormal. For more information about them, and even join them on an investigation, find them on Facebook. Just search Blue Collar Paranormal, Haunted Murray Station Homestead, Haunted Woodlawn Estates, and Haunted Bentonville School. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you can become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Find everything there, all ad free. For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thanks so much for listening.